The Alaska Energy Authority Board meeting of January 30th to order at 9 a.m. Roll call, please.
Yes, sir. Okay, we'll start with Commissioner Sandy.
Here.
Commissioner Crum. Oh, there he is. Hold on one second. So we just started with roll call, Commissioner Crum. So, Commissioner Crum?
Present.
Okay. Mr. Mathiason?
Present.
Ms. Miller?
Here.
Mr. Seidman?
Present.
Mr. Izzo?
Here.
Mr. Mitchell?
Here.
And Chair Copeland?
Here.
You have a quorum, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Would the board like to recommend any modifications to the agenda? Okay, seeing none, if there is no objection, the agenda will stand approved as submitted. We have the prior minutes of the November 18th, 2024 meeting. What's the will of the board?
Mr. Chairman, Tony Izzo, I'll put a motion on the table to approve the minutes.
Jen Miller, second.
We have a motion and a second. Are there any additions, deletions, corrections, or discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Yes, sir. Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiason?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
And Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Now we have the public comments item on the agenda. I just remember that the members of the public who would like to provide written comments, you can email those to publiccomment@akenergyauthority.org. That was yesterday at 4 p.m. as the cutoff. On this meeting day today, callers can enter the teleconference muted. After, as we go into public comments, you'll be asked to press star 9 on your phone if you'd like to make a public comment. And that will initiate the hand-raising function. We'll unmute callers individually in the order they're received, and when an individual is unmuted, you'll hear it's now your turn to speak. And then please identify yourself for the record, and you can make your public comments, and we'd ask that you keep those to 2 minutes. Do we have any online now?
So if anyone is on the phone, you can press star 9 that wants to make a public comment.
Okay, and while we're waiting for those to come in, we have a guest speakers today from Terra Energy, a center project introduction, and we will go ahead and welcome them to give a presentation. If you could just introduce yourself for the record, and we just ask you to keep it to 15 or 20 minutes, and we can open it to questions from the board.
Yes, good morning. I'm Chad Schleusner, General Manager for Terra Energy Center. I'm currently traveling right now. My bandwidth is a little low, so I was going to turn off the camera, but and then I was going to go into the presentation. Are you going to be able to display the presentation, or should I share it?
Yes, sir. Just give me 1 second here. I'm pulling it up. Working.
Fantastic. Thank you. And we also have Rob Power from Terra Energy Center on the line as well.
Are you able to see that on the screen?
I am. I see the agenda.
Can you see it now? There you go.
I can. Yes, thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, and just let me know when you want to advance, please.
I sure will. Appreciate it. Hello. Good morning. My name is Chad Schleusner, General Manager for Terra Energy Center. I've led major projects across Alaska, as well as the Lower 48, including many international projects as well. At Terra Energy Center, we have an experienced team advancing the decarbonized biomass coal-fired power plant in the West Susitna, which is identified by the AEA as one of the clean energy projects for the rail belt. We are working with a strong group of companies and industry experts to advance this project, including our owner engineers, Sargent Lundy, who is a world-leading firm familiar with advancing carbon capture and major power plant projects. In addition to Sargent Lundy, we have a strong Korean-led EPCM consortium. We collaborate with UAF. We're working with power plant operators, pipeline development companies, major Alaska oil and gas operators, and several technical teams advancing our environmental studies, pipeline routes, CO2 sequestration, plant design, and project financing. The work done to date shows that a biomass and coal-fired power plant not only delivers cost-competitive firm power supply, but is also the only in-state long-term energy supply that is not dependent on, one, international commodity markets, and two, price and delivery volatility and related risks. We are an Alaskan company providing Alaska power for Alaskans. First, I'll walk you through the significant energy reserves that we have on site to power the rail belt and the work completed to date. Then I will provide an overview of the power plant and related public policy. And then I will summarize how we're able to work together to bring home the $400 million DOE grant, as well as move the project forward to an FID in 2026. We have two requests from the AEA. AEA letter of support for our application to the DOE, and two, an option to work with AEA to put a plan in place for the building blocks to achieve FID in 2026 and potentially online power date in 2030.
Chad, so you can go to Chad, can I interrupt you? Which slide number should I be on?
Yeah, I just haven't started yet, so you can go back to the beginning. I apologize.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
No worries. I know that was a big introduction, but I just kind of wanted to get that context out there. So if you go to the second slide, to the third slide, really what this is about is Alaska is coal rich. There's a significant abundance of coal in Alaska, and specifically on our site, we have an abundance. To date, we have identified 521 million tons of reserve and resource coal identified, which is a significant volume. Less than half of that could power a 1 gigawatt power plant for over 30 years. Next slide. To date, we have done significant environmental baseline data collection, and we have been doing permitting studies for 6 years, and will continue to do so in 2025. Next slide. Really, just this highlights our coal specifically, and the fact that it is a uniquely clean coal and fuel supply. Next slide. Important point to discuss is that without CCS, coal is cleaner than imported LNG. There's a lot of past history associated with coal plants. Specifically, much of the United States is familiar with coal plants that are 50 years old or older with 70-year-old technology. And what's the reality is we are building a modern coal plant with modern technology that is not your granddad's coal plant. We are able to provide a coal plant that meets current standards, and with our unique fuel supply that has no methane, when you compare that against LNG that has methane, that leaks methane through the process and then emits CO2 when it is burned, a coal-fired power plant, a modern coal-fired power plant, has lower emissions than LNG. When you look at a coal-fired power plant with carbon capture, it is cleaner than wind with natural gas peakers. And this would be a new build, which isn't going to be a retrofit like many of the coal-fired power plants with carbon capture in the lower 48. It'll be integrated and designed together to create a very low emission facility. Next slide. And then go to the next slide. Really what this is all about is we have enough fuel on site to power South Central. And the significance of that is we can now save the gas for heating and not have it consumed by power production. Next slide. When we look at firm power options in Alaska, coal with carbon capture is the lowest cost option that we have identified. Next slide. A recent UAF study that focused on fuel costs in Alaska, comparing coal to LNG and gas, coal is the winner. It is the lowest cost fuel in Alaska for delivering energy. Next slide. In addition, when you compare that to gas supply, coal is just the lower priced fuel. It's priced lower, and it's predictable. Next slide. When you look at other energy options, wind, solar, grid batteries, one of the major risks associated with those is materials are in short supply. And as we can see with recent policy and executive orders from Trump, that wind is subject to policy changes. Next slide. Carbon capture technology is in use. It's been around for decades. Carbon capture is a proven technology. It's identified as the best system of emissions reductions and supported by the DOE. We have over 5,000 miles of CO2 pipelines throughout the United States, and these have been transporting CO2 for decades. Next slide. CO2 is a commodity. We can deliver CO2 to security for the state. And that's just an alternate benefit of the power plant and carbon capture. Next slide. There is stakeholder support for the project. Just highlight, you can see the bullets on the right, but really highlight that the DOE has already granted funds to Alaska to develop CO2 pipelines as well as storage verification. And then looking at public support in 2023, a Dittman poll research for Anchorage residents identified 65% supported coal with carbon capture and 65% opposed importing LNG. Next slide. As discussed earlier, the DOE has funded multiple coal and carbon capture projects over the throughout the United States. Next slide. And currently, there is a notice of funding opportunity right now that Terra Energy Center is working to support and deliver a concept paper by March 1st. The full application is due on July 1st of 2025. And we believe the state has a real opportunity to win this grant and benefit the ratepayers of South Central if we can work together with the AEA and other agencies to support this funding opportunity. Next slide. Next slide, please. Really, we've come a long way in the last year. Significantly, we are progressing through pre-FEED and look to wrap up pre-FEED by the end of March. This will give us significantly more project definition, looking at level 2 schedule as well as a class 4 estimate for both CapEx and OpEx for the project, and provide the additional details to understand our project fully and be able to transition into FEED. Next slide. This slide discusses typically how a procurement process would happen with a state entity and a utility. In Alaska, we have a unique situation where we will work with multiple utilities. We have complexities within the transmission system. We have complexities within relationships between each of the utilities. And we believe AEA has a role to help support this complexity and navigate this procurement process and define the best delivery option for providing power to South Central. They had a very successful model with Bradley Lake. Maybe there is some aspects of Bradley Lake that could be applied to our project to help support the delivery. Next slide. Really, this comes down to what we offer. We offer predictable, cost-competitive, in-state power with low emissions. In closing, we wish to work with AEA to bring these benefits to Alaska. We're seeking two asks from AEA. One, the letter of support for the $400 million grant opportunity for Alaska. And number two, to be able to work closely with AEA staff to advance the project towards FID in 2026. Terra Energy Center is part of the energy supply equation for Alaskan's economy and future growth, and we believe this project merits close consideration by AEA. We look forward to working with AEA staff to be a part of the effective and secure energy solution for the rail belt, and we thank you for your time and consideration. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them now.
Okay, thank you, Chad. Just quickly on a couple acronyms, you mentioned pre-FEED. What is the FEED milestone, or what does that FEED stand for?
Yeah, so front-end engineering and design. Okay. It's an early engineering effort to really define our scope and lock our scope that we can go into more detailed engineering through FEL3 or FEED, as it's described.
Okay, thanks. And then you mentioned FID towards the end?
Yeah, final investment decision. So this is really, we are at a point that we are ready to execute this project. We have the information, the design developed to a significant level that we can engage with an EPC or EPCM contractor to deliver this project, make the major procurement efforts associated with the project, and really move this project forward and advance it.
Okay, thank you. Questions, board? Mr. Izzo?
Yeah, thank you, Tony Izzo, for the record. Just for the sake of transparency, I want to disclose that Matanuska Electric is working closely with Terra Energy. We have, we're working on a non-binding term sheet for a power purchase agreement. We do have a confidentiality agreement in place, and I just thank, again, on the, you know, for the sake of transparency to the public and the board, that I need to disclose that.
Jen.
Thank you for the presentation, Chad. Can you comment on the DOE funding opportunity? You know, do you see any risk to that funding opportunity going away? And then can you speak to the project's position of, you know, how strongly does it meet the objectives of that funding opportunity as far as like a chance of success?
Yeah, great question, Jen. So we've had support for carbon capture since 2008. We don't believe that the 45Q tax credits are going to go anywhere. The DOE funding, there's benefits to it by, you know, there's bipartisan support for it. So I believe that there's the likelihood is highly probable that this DOE funding will move forward. As far as our position, we are a very unique position, and it goes back to that we are a new build. There's no other new build in the United States that has carbon capture associated with it. So this is of keen interest to the DOE that we can develop a power plant that's integrated from the beginning with the carbon capture system at scale, commercial scale. And I think we are the only project in the United States that can deliver it. So we're in a great position, and I think we have as good a shot as anybody.
Other questions, board?
Were there key timelines coming up for that grant? I might have missed that.
Yeah, so a concept paper is due March 1st. It's a brief 10-page document that lays out the key highlights to our project. And we would like to have letters of support. They wouldn't be included with the concept paper, but it's important for us to reference those in the concept paper that is due on March 1st. And then the full application is due on July 1st.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, board? Okay. Thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you, everyone, for your time.
Okay. And we can take down the slide and go back to the agenda. But under public comment, I'll go to the room here. Are there any in attendance that would like to make public comments? Mr. Treadwell. Sarah, can you just come up to a mic over here? Thank you. If you could just introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Meade Treadwell. Do I need to...
Turn it green. There you go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Meade Treadwell, members of the board around the state. It's nice to see you, and thanks for the opportunity. I'm a chairman and CEO of Kelak LNG, which is a second LNG project that is proposed to directly export LNG from the North Slope using gas from the Point Thompson field. And I am here today. First, I wanted to hear the previous presentation and give them moral support. I think that's a very important project to look at. The second reason to be here is just to let you know that, and we're doing this several different places, there is a second LNG project. In Texas, there are six or seven LNG projects. In Louisiana, there are three or four, and there's enough gas on the North Slope to support several projects. We propose to export 4 million tons a year, which is about 560 million feet a day. We have done pre-feasibility study, lots of extra shipping studies, and we are planning to begin a feasibility study this year. The purpose of being here today is simply to ask this board and AEA to think about delivery of LNG from the North Slope to Alaska communities with us. And you have and when I say with us, I would say also with AKLNG, though I'm not speaking for them in any way. If we are going to be importing LNG into Cook Inlet, there's an opportunity to ship boxed LNG and ISO containers to communities, to mine sites, to places that may need cheaper or more reliable fuel. A lot of the power plants that you bought have the capability for dual fuel. AEA did a study in 2014 on this where ice-choked communities were just basically ground-ruled out of the study. There's now been enough advancement in the ISO container efficiency so that regasification may require only two deliveries a year to support a community's needs. There is a study on some alternatives being done by the Arctic Domain Awareness Center with ASRC Federal and others. The format of the study that you did in 2014, we think is a good start to look at. We've identified a contractor who's actually building the LNG storage facility on the North Slope for Hillcorp. It's an Indian contractor that appears to have one of the leading advances in technology on these ISO containers. And for us, I'll just put it this way. We're a 4 million ton a year project. About a quarter of our project could could fit what NSTAR and others are looking at for South Central Gas. The opportunities for trading transportation are strong, but the opportunities for us to be able to load ISO containers and barges to serve Alaskan communities is fairly strong. And I'd say you have that opportunity in Cook Inlet if there's LNG available. And I just think AEA and its planning would be a very good partner with our feasibility study and some of the other to basically review and upgrade the work that you did now 11 years ago. So that's the purpose of my being here today. I also just want to say, as a matter of state policy, I appreciate the fact that Governor Dunleavy has been supportive of what we're doing. Alaska is not putting all its eggs in one basket. When you take a look at the last proposal you just heard and what we're doing, it's very prudent for us to try to advance several different concepts and would encourage AEA to take a stronger role in that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there other public comment from the room? Do we have any public comments online?
There appears to be no public comments on the phone at this time.
Okay, thank you. Next item is committee reports. Director Thayer.
Thank you. I actually was with the personnel committee. They met and Tony is as the chair, so I will turn it over to Tony.
Thank you. Curtis, Tony Izzo for the record. The personnel committee met on Tuesday, January 28th, 10 o'clock a.m., attended by Jen Miller, myself, and Commissioner Sandy. The committee was presented with an updated employee policies and guidelines document. We took two items of action in that we elected a chair and a vice chair, being myself and Jen Miller as vice chair. Following review of the updated policies and guidelines as presented, employee policies and guidelines as presented by AEA staff, we were impressed with the work product, and we recommended by motion unanimously that the document be brought to and approved by the AEA board. Miss anything? No.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, board? Okay, thank you for the report. Next item is old business. We have none. New business. First item is resolution 25-01, fiscal year 26, operating and capital budget submissions ratification. Director Thayer.
All right, thank you. What we have here before you is a resolution that after the governor submits his budget, that the board endorses that budget, both operating and capital. And so that's what the purpose of this resolution 2501 is. But just to give a little background on it, there's some additional pages behind it, just for the board's understanding of what the governor's proposed budget is, what his proposed budget is going forward as it relates to AEA, and then some comparison contrast to previous years. Including we have a pie chart here of what our operating budget is, where our funds come from within that operating budget. The same with capital. And again, our capital receipts are the highest portion of that, predominantly because of the IIJ and IRA funding that comes through. But as far as, I'm sorry, I don't have a page number here. But we do have on the AEA operating budget, we have a priority ranking of one through six. And so this is what we had requested of the governor's office. And we had asked for a request of $3.5 million from working capital. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. But ADA, the administration has talked about ADA. They're providing that working capital as they've done for the last 30 years. So they will continue to do that. And there's a resolution to have them for FY26 do that, which actually starts June 1st. Then we have the governor included replacing funding of three positions for the Circuit Rider program for $710,000, the source being the PCE endowment. The Data Library Administration Hosting Expansion, that's a reappropriation of funds from a previous grant, and that is in the governor's budget, as well as looking at the leased warehouse roof replacement. We've asked them to look at that. We do have a warehouse that we have that we utilize from Department of Natural Resources. We're there rent-free, but we do need a new roof. So those are ongoing some issues about roofing, or do we actually move to a smaller location? It's more space than we need, and we're having a lot of trouble with crime and cutting trying to catch our building on fire. There's a homeless camp nearby, so copper wire is really interesting when we have our generators there. And then also we've asked for $80,000, and that's to look for additional spending. There's $304,000 that is in the budget, and that is for us to either stay in this location. Right now we're rent-free here, or the opportunity to look for space outside of this building. The one thing that we do know is with our additional folks that we have coming on board, we do not have enough room by fire code to be in this building. The building has its own issues, but the fact is we don't have space. Matter of fact, above this room, we have 9 people in cubicles. We are at capacity. And then one of the ones, and that is in the supplemental budget, which you should see coming forward, is we've asked for a reappropriation of $624,000. And for that purposes is we need to update our accounting system, phone system, copiers, and some hardware refresh. And so that is just back office. And since we've identified the money in a reappropriation, that's always better than looking for UGF or undesignated funds for that purpose. And so we expect to see that in the supplemental. And then when it comes to our capital budget, we did ask, the governor included in his budget $1.5 million towards the grid partnership or the GRIP funding. The state has put $12.7 million in. The utilities and AEA through the bond has put in $50 million. The governor has a placeholder of $1.5. That's going to be a longer conversation with the legislature on that number, or looking for maybe outside investment. The Dixon Diversion Project to optimize Bradley Lake to increase it by 50%. They've put $6.5 million in the budget. They have asked if AEA and the utilities could possibly find another $6 million to come to the 12.5. That will allow us to file with FERC in January, so we'll stay on track. And I will note this, is with this funding being in FY26, the money becomes available July 1st. And so really it behooves us to work with the utilities to find additional money now so we don't lose a spring construction season before the money becomes available in July 1st. So it's also splitting that piece up. The bulk fuel upgrades, the budget includes $4 million, which is the same as last year's spending level. For powerhouse upgrades, it's $5 million, the same as last year's level. As far as the IIJ, grid resilience, for our formula funding, there's a request in it for a total of $13.4 million. $1 million is UGF. That number is going to go up a little bit as far as the Federal Receipt Authority, because there's more funding available that we're eligible for. It does not require more match. It just requires us to have the Receipt Authority to take it. And then Round 17 Renewable Energy Grants, we had actually asked for $5 million. That's the same placeholder as we had last year, and the governor's budget included $6.3. So they increased the funding there. Last year, the legislature increased it by another $4 to $5 million. So we expect to see that number possibly grow. As far as the greenhouse gas reduction, the Solar for All competition that we were successful in winning, last year we had $20 million in the budget for Federal Receipt Authority. This year we're asking for the balance, which is $42,450,000 for Federal Receipt Authority, and the governor has put that in his budget. The Whittier Cruise Ship Terminal Port Electrification which is one of those projects that we didn't ask for, but we were given to electrify the port in Whittier. We had actually asked $3.5 million, and the governor's budget included 4.4. This is a partnership with Holland America, as well as Chugach Electric, and Holland America has contributed $6 million towards that project. And the state funding is out of the cruise ship passenger tax. So it's a specialized bucket of money that is aimed at the cruise ship industry based on the head based on their passenger ship head tax. Two pieces that I would like to really highlight is 9 and 10, and this is new, and we've asked for a change in language, and that is the federal tax credits. AEA will apply for tax credits for projects funded by AEA and will apply for revenue for tax credits towards renewable energy projects as matching funds for federal funds. So in essence, if we get federal, if we have a tax credit, let's say for our Dixon diversion, the tax credit that we earn, we put back into a renewable project. Traditionally, that would go to the state of Alaska. So we've asked for it to go back into our projects. Makes perfect sense to keep those projects low. So we've asked for that. And then the other large one is AEA holds all corporation funds in an interest-bearing account. Interest earned on federal grant funds and matching funds appropriated to AEA will be appropriated to AEA as matching funds that will hedge against inflation. So in essence, if we got a federal, the $12.7 million, perfect example, the state gives that to us, we hold an interest-bearing account, and then we pay them the interest. What we've asked for in this with this budget language is that we retain that interest. And then that really, like I said, hedges on inflation. But again, it's just for the state funds that we were able to do that. So if they were to give us $100 million towards IIJ or for the GRIP funding, we would retain those interest earnings. And then also in the supplemental is for rural Alaska for electrical emergencies. Our budget has been about $200,000 a year. It's a reappropriation, and so it's $234,500. So, though, and then behind that is the backup of all the additional budget components and then the actual entries into the system, as we call ABS with a background. But the summary Excel spreadsheet has everything.
Any questions, Board, before we consider a motion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For number nine, the number nine, the federal receipts, Curtis, is there like an anticipated amount up to? Or are you just looking for just a broad federal receipt?
Broad federal receipt authority, or through the chair, broad federal receipt authority, because we don't know with what projects that we have is going to be A, eligible for tax credits, and how much. For example, we've contracted out with a national firm, looking at Bradley and the Dixon diversion and what type of tax credits they might qualify for. But I would imagine after this last, shall we say, 5 days, they're throwing everything out the book, and we might have to restart over what tax credits might look like and which ones are available. But again, it's broad because we don't know yet what we qualify for.
Yeah, I think it's probably safe to say that there'll be some federal action in the next fiscal year adjusting that. So I think the broad receipt authority is probably a very good ask from the legislature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jen?
Yes, I support the broad receipt of the federal tax credits. And just a clarifying question on that, Curtis. You know, would AEA want those funds to be, you know, like say we want to apply them to fuel system upgrades in rural Alaska or other things, do we want to broaden how that money can be applied, or do you want to keep it specific to renewable energy projects?
Through the chair, on that point, I think the biggest opportunity for tax credits is the Dixon diversion, and what I would assume we would do is take those tax credits and apply it against Dixon diversion to lower the cost of the project to the consumer. So it's kind of, I'm assuming the tax credits will stay with that, with a particular project.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Appreciate it.
That's me, just so I can see hands up. It's a little easier. Are there other questions of Curtis? Okay, just remind the board that we have these draft hard copy here in the room, and you received them in your packet of draft motions if you'd care to follow those, but consider a motion for approval of this resolution.
Sure. Tony Izzo for the record. I move that The AEA Board approved Resolution 2025-01, Fiscal Year 26, Operating and Capital Budget Submissions Ratification as presented.
Jen Miller, second.
We have a motion, a second. Discussion? Hearing none.
Mr. Chair, I'll call for the question.
Okay, question's been called. Roll call vote, please.
Yes, sir. Mr. Mathiasen?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. The next item is Resolution 2025-02, use of interest for Bradley Lake required project work. Director Thuria?
All right, thank you. I would like to invite Mark, our general counsel, to the table, just in case I miss anything or you might have other questions. But basically what this resolution does is we had a resolution in 2022 for our Series 11 bonds, which was the $166 million. And in that bonding resolution, we had laid out of required project work in addition, Dixon Diversion, Bradley Lake, and required project work such as the SQ upgrade associated with Bradley, the batteries, different itemized ones that were approved by the Department of Law. Well, since then, we did get an opinion from the Department of Law that we could use some of that funding for the GRIP match, against the $206.5 million that we needed. So we did approve, the board did approve, BPMC, the Bradley Lake Management Committee, approved $20 million, and then this year an additional 30 for a total of $50 million. So one of the things we needed to do was to update our master bond resolution. So we have been working with our bondholders. They're supportive of this. They've requested this document to upgrade, to do this. And we would not have approved the $50 million without verbal or without opinion from them. So this is just updating our resolution from 2022, identifying it, and the additional funding. The one new section on here that we did talk about, and that was, is the last whereas in the packet, and it says, whereas AEA desires to amend the 10th Supplemental Resolution and any other agreements related to the Series 2022 bonds to permit the authority to apply interest earnings on the proceeds of the 2022 bonds deposited into the 11th Series construction account. So basically what we're doing is we, of $166 million, we're earning interest. And it has always been, you know, my thought and our position that money would actually go back into these required project work or these required projects identified by these bonding. This actually does it by a resolution at this board. So the interest that we've earned would go back into the construction account for the identified purposes. And one of those identified purposes is the Dixon diversion. So when we look about the state where we need to come up with $6 million, looking at taking interest that we've earned, apply that to the 6, the state puts in the 6.5, we're at 12. And it's not out of the utilities, it's out of the interest earnings. So, and that was, if there's additional interest earnings, there will be additional interest earnings over the course of the bonding, that we would also, like I said, apply it to the projects identified. So I wanted to highlight that. I have had a conversation with all the CEOs on the rail belt and have asked that we do a similar, if we have a resolution of concurrence from the BPMC, who meet on February 14th. And they've all verbally agreed to do that, and then we'll put something forward on that. But so in essence, that's what this resolution does. It acknowledges the $50 million, it updates our bonds, and it actually applies the interest to the projects that's been identified. Did I miss anything, Mark?
No, that was very good. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. I'd say procedurally, you all would pass this resolution here. We would need to get that concurrence on the BPMC, and then we need to amend the bond documents, and then it will all be done.
Any questions, Board, of Curtis or Mark?
So Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Seidman, I believe, have their hands raised.
Okay, Mr. Mitchell.
Well, I will defer if Mr. Seidman has a question, but I would like to make the motion to approve this resolution 2025-02. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Seidman.
Yeah, I do have a question on the Series 2022 bonds. Are those subject to arbitrage and federal tax withholdings? And then, where the if they are subject to it, how do we resolve the taxes that the interest accrues?
It's not going to be an issue, and the we can get bond counsel to answer those questions precisely, but it's not going to make an impact. It's not going to have an impact on the taxes that are owed here. If anything, we are we're getting subsidies for these. We can get subsidies for these bonds, but it's not going to have an impact on the taxes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I heard a motion from Mr. Mitchell to approve. Is there a second?
Jen Miller, second.
We have a motion, a second. Discussion? Mr. Issel.
Yes. Thank you, Curtis. I think for the sake of maybe clarity, I want to speak to why I'm in support of this. The state owns Bradley Lake. I think that's a fact that all are aware of. The utilities that take the power off of Bradley, the purchasers, receive that lowest cost power in the rail belt. It's firm, it's dispatchable. We're talking about 4 cents or so per kilowatt hour. And the utilities don't mark that up at all. It's a complete pass-through, and the members, the consumers from Homer to Seward to the Valley and Fairbanks pay for all of the costs associated on a pro rata basis. So in essence, the Seward consumer is paying the same pro rata share as a Fairbanks consumer for this power. It's a great business model. And what I really like about this is that not only are the utilities, the purchasers are not for profit, so there's no markup on that whatsoever. This allows earnings to go back directly to benefit those same consumers. So thank you, Curtis. I think, well done.
Further discussion, board?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd just like to concur with Member Izzo's comments on this. This is an appropriate use of looking forward by the AEA staff and the BPMC to actually identify, possible gains back to the fund by using the interest accordingly. So I appreciate that the team is constantly looking to maximize the use of the public financing on our given project. So I will be supporting this as well. Nicely done, staff.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Other comments or discussions? Sorry, board. Okay, sounds like we've had comments in favor, but hearing no further discussion, roll call vote, please.
Yes, sir. Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
And Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. The next item under new business is Resolution 2025-03, authorizing AEA to borrow $3.5 million from ADA for working capital. Director Thayer.
Oh, all right, thank you. A little bit of background on this, and that was prior to the separation of the boards, AEA had an agreement for literally, it had been amended, but literally for the last 30 years. The previous agreement was in place for, I think, 15 plus years. And that was, is that we had the ability to borrow $7.5 million from ADA as working capital. And basically, we would get to 7.5 at the beginning of the year, and it's working capital, mainly with payroll and with our Denali Commission of Grants, because we need to do advance the work, get reimbursed, advance the work, get reimbursed. And we had done that without interest on how we manage that money for, like I said, for 30-plus years. When the ADA board and AEA boards were split, the ADA board, the ADA board wished to no longer provide this working capital. And so in conversations with Randy and with the ADA board chair, the ADA board did approve a resolution that we could borrow on it, but the difference would be it would be for just 2025 and or FY 2025, and that it would only be, and that we would be charged an interest rate of 5.25%, which again, we have no mechanism in which to pay that interest because there's no way to collect off the federal awards. But one of the things that we did do is work with the state, and we've now taken the AEA payroll out of the equation because now we're part, now we are using IRIS, which is the state's payroll system. And so the state is providing that working capital. As we get reimbursed for our payroll, we reimburse the state. And so we are just, so we have that arrangement with the state. So the only thing outstanding was the actual working capital for our grants, really focused in rural Alaska. So based on the resolution was passed by ADA, which was G2402, Randy and I reached an agreement this year that we would borrow the money, have the availability of the working capital. We have an MOU that was laid out. I think you guys have copies of it on what that does. And the way that the interest side was handled was that we would pay any interest earned on the account. We would give back to ADA, which is what we do with the state. So that's very common, not an issue. And we were asked to put, we did put forth the $3.5 million. It is our understanding, or it is a conversation I had, that the Office of Management and Budget would like to see this $3.5 million continue into FY26 to extend it another year. And so what you have before you is just a memo outlining it and then a resolution for us to have that discussion with ADA to borrow the 3.5 and have the conditions of the rent and the reimbursement. And the reason I bring it up now in January is because our next official board meeting is in April, and this is for July 1st, and so we'd obviously want to have this seamless and apply in July 1st for the FY26 year, and then we'll probably reevaluate it next year with all the parties to make sure as we go forward if this arrangement is working.
Commissioner Crum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Curtis, for the public, kind of, is this very similar to what a line of credit would be for a private sector business?
Yes.
Thank you. And just about all my businesses and every business I know, we all have this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other questions, board? Okay, seeing none, I'll consider a motion.
Jen Miller, I move that the board approve resolution 2025-03 authorizing AEA to borrow $3.5 million from ADA for working capital as presented.
Ingemar Arbetyson here, second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? I'm trying to get to a screen where I can see this, sorry. Okay, I don't see any hands up, so hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Sandy?
Yes.
Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiason?
Yes.
And Ms. Miller?
Yes.
The motion carries, Chair.
Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda is the Bradley utility priority for purchase of Bradley Lake Renewable Energy certificates. Director Thayer.
Thank you. As you recall, the AEA board previously voted to look at selling REC credits or renewable energy credits related to Bradley Lake. We have an estimate that, you know, if we look back, it's worth, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. Looking forward, it could be $400,000 to $500,000 a year. And so we took that, I took that issue to the Bradley Lake Management Committee. We had a conversation on it, and they produced a letter on December 19, 2024, addressed to the chair that I've included in the packet that says they would endorse, they unanimously support. However, they would also like to be also first right of refusal of those credits. Since this letter was submitted, it has not been retracted, but since this letter has been submitted, one of the utilities has done more of a legal analysis on their position, and so I think this is more of a work in progress. You know, the one thing I think it's important to note is our intent with this effort was if there was a way to monetize REC credits, that then we take that funding and put it into the capital projects such as Dixon and Bradley, it would benefit the ratepayer. So we were just looking at a market that had not been previously tapped and thought we were doing well. But we need, we have one particular utility we need to work with, and I think have a more conversations with. And we will do that. So this is a work in progress, but we did get this letter, but like I said, there's now been a new snafu, so to speak, in a different opinion by one of the utilities. So we'll continue to work through that. But okay. The goal is the same.
So this is basically informational, not requesting board action at this time, but is there any board comments or discussion? Ms. Miller?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I guess what I would say is my hope would be is, you know, if a renewable portfolio standard was, you know, passed by the legislature, my hope would be is that it provides a runway of notice of multiple years before it goes into effect, because I'd hate to see us not monetize these RECs because we're hoarding them in case there's a penalty or we're, you know, you're kind of acting out of a position of fear, and I would hate to see us miss out on that monetary value back to the ratepayers because we're, you know, in the event of. Anyway, so I guess, you know, it's maybe more of a comment about legislation, in that I hope it would give utilities time to plan to meet those targets and so that we can make near-term commercial agreements to maximize value to Alaskans. So yeah. Thank you.
I think to that point, Director Thayer, isn't there kind of a lot of times markers, I mean, they'll go back so many years and that's all. So if, as time marches forward, you can drop off and lose those years back. Okay. All right. Other discussion, board? Mr. Izzo, and then Mitchell.
As a follow-up to Jen Miller's comments, and maybe just stated a slightly different way, I think from a utility perspective, the concern would be that an RPS would have the effect of raising rates, maybe an unintended consequence as a result of not having Bradley REC. So on one hand, you're selling them for the benefit of the ratepayer, and then through legislation, you're being penalized and having to pay more because you gave them away. When you actually look at the megawatt hours, my hope is that any legislation would be based on actual energy and not necessarily you know, what color it might be, green versus something else, because the amount of renewable energy being consumed isn't going to change whether or not there, you know, there's a penalty. So maybe that's something we could look forward to, is just a comment regarding any potential future legislation that this kind of thing, that an unintended consequence like this be avoided.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Duff Mitchell for the record. Look, we've discussed RECs in previous board meetings. We've discussed RECs of selling them. We've discussed how do we add and combine, or how do we end block smaller wrecks from other projects across Alaska. And I would just, this is just a comment, I would just advise that we move and resolve expeditiously. I don't want to hypothesize or whatever legislation is going to come out in the future. I'd rather deal with the facts as they sit today, because I would like to move on this. And I think there's the second and third order consequences as we're also trying to get more sale of these renewable energy certificates and credits into Alaska for the benefit of lowering Alaska's cost of power. So in as much, my comment is, you know, I'm hoping that the utilities, I don't want to use the word stall by study, but I'd like to have this expeditiously and committedly resolved to the best that we can. The other thing I have is granted an option to purchase the portion of the RECs. I'd like to hear from the executive director. Is this at market value? Is this, a special rate that, I'm just trying to understand that as AEA, we're trying to maximize the renewable energy credits for what they can provide to Bradley Lake and to the Bradley Lake Project Management Committee. I just have a question on the value proposition of when someone's granted an option to purchase, the memo is silent on the value proposition. So maybe there's some clarification, or maybe that's also a work in progress, but I'm just curious. Thank you.
The chair, I would say that that's a work in progress. There is a market value for these, and when the letter was drafted in that conversation and Tony was there, we really didn't put a value on the credits. We know approximately what they were valued, but it wasn't a conversation of how much the utilities would pay versus somebody else. It was just the conversation of having the first right of refusal on them. But it is a work in progress conversation because one of the utilities doesn't believe that we have the right as the owners to sell the REC credits, that they own those REC credits already. So those are some of the things we just need to kind of flesh out a little bit. And again, this is something where, as I've said it before, no good deed goes unpunished. It's a way to, when we thought about this, we assumed we're selling to third parties outside of Alaska to bring in the REC credits, to take that money and apply it to the projects, capital projects in those with regards to Bradley. So again, it's a work in progress. We want to sort this out to the benefit of everybody. But again, it's to benefit the ratepayer at the end of the day. That's what we're trying to do. So I think it's just a couple of ideas on how to do it.
Okay, Mr. Mitchell, you had a follow up question here.
Yeah, I did. Thank you for that clarification. As an AEA board member, and irregardless of any utilities position, I would back the executive director up that these are, in fact, AEA REC credits. And it's really the position I think is correct. It's not the ownership of anyone's utility REC credits. And I don't want us to get bogged down on this, but take a solid approach position. So I appreciate the executive director's discussion, and I support him taking that stronger approach on behalf of AEA for the reasons he said. This is to drive down the cost of power for Alaskans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Seidman, and then Izzo.
Yeah, through the chair, thank you. Resolution 2024-17 was discussed here just recently in one of the last board meetings, and it was voted unanimously to authorize AEA to sell the renewable energy credits. And for the purposes that Member Mitchell mentioned, was to try and reduce the cost of energy or potentially maintain rates without rate increases and investing in our current infrastructure. The only thing that I have comment on is the sale of those, I want to make sure that we're doing it legally. So if there is anything that may be an issue, and that being said, if these are already being claimed, they call it double dipping. And so I want to be careful that we don't sell renewable energy certificates or credits or whatever we're calling them that have already been sold. And so we give that opportunity to the utilities to ensure that that is not being sold twice. And, you know, in the rail belt, we've got a mixed portfolio, so renewables in a lower percentage. But in some areas around the state, the renewable energy is 100%, like here in Southeast. And so we have to be careful, for example, in Juneau, there are potentially some companies that are claiming that their energy is being produced by renewables. And so we need to make sure that we pay close attention and that we don't do something that might come back and bite us.
Okay, good point. Further discussion? Mr. Insoso.
Thanks, Curtis. I have a different perspective compared to Mr. Mitchell. I think that we need to be really careful. The mission here is to reduce the cost of energy to Alaskans. I want to disclose it is not Matanuska Electric. I'm not in the utility or represent the utility that is challenging these. My position has been consistent as an AEA board member who voted to move forward with this. But new information has come up, and somebody is challenging these. And what I don't want to see is hubris get in the way that then drives additional legal costs, legal challenges, or legislation that could result in a utility being forced to pay $1.20 for something that it might have already legally had. That is contrary to reducing the cost of energy to Alaskans. So thanks to Curtis and staff. Like you said, no good deed goes unpunished. But I think you clearly have identified an issue that has to be resolved before you just rush in like a bull in a china closet.
Okay, thank you. Did you have discussions?
Yes, I did. Jen Miller for the record. I do support Mr. Izzo's comments. I think it's prudent to, we don't want to sell something that, then we end up, the utilities end up having to pay for in an RPS. So I do completely appreciate that. And maybe a technicality, but it could be helpful, and I think the ownership issue has to get resolved. But if we're talking about selling old RECs, and I think something too is just we can really key into what's the term commitment on selling these RECs, and that could help open up some flexibility and maybe provide comfort for the parties. Mm-hmm. Is if we're only committing to sell 1 to 2 years at a time in the future, that's kind of where I was going with it. I hope that legislation would give utilities enough notice so that, and maybe it is something where they say, hey, we're comfortable selling for the next 1 to 2 years. We'll watch what happens with legislation, but we can monetize in the meantime, but we kind of keep our finger on the pulse and we don't overcommit and put ourselves in a bad situation. So my hope would be, I've seen that in the contracts, and with some work that we've done on past projects is, just be conscious of the term and that way we keep our options open to make sure that we're not, causing increased costs instead of our intention of reducing. So anyways, appreciate the work here, and I think good discussion by all the parties.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion, board? Okay, seeing none, that was informational, good discussion. So we have director comments now, and then we do have an executive session item following, and we do have some confidential materials have been passed out, but I'll just go through these items one at a time for director comments on them. That's for you,
Mr. Curtis. Copeland?
Yes.
Someone has raised their hand a while ago. I was trying to get your attention. So I don't know if it's on the telephone. I don't know if they're public comments or That would be the only thing.
Okay. Let me, maybe we didn't allow enough time there actually to check back on the phone, but there's no objection. I'll just revert to public comments for a moment to see if we have public comments online.
Let me recognize this person and find out why they have their hand raised.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
You need to speak a little louder, please.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And my apologies. We realized that we had a hand up online, so I reverted to public comments on the agenda. Was that your intention to provide public comments?
My hand was up since the TARA presentation. I had a question, and perhaps the representatives from that presentation are gone, but let me introduce myself. My name is Melis Cody. I'm with the Susitna River Coalition, and I've been curious about some of the information around the proposed Susitna Clean Coal Project, and it's hard to find information about it, including the Terra Energy Corporation doesn't have a website. Specific to the funding topic areas for the Department of Energy grant, I was curious because the slide in the presentation, and I know you're going back several topic areas in your heads now, but they had said, you know, there's DOE funding up to $40 million, but I was confused because the funding topic area that they're applying for is a TA2, which is for pilot projects. And although that category of funding has up to $450 million of funding available, the plan is to award, you know, up to five projects. So, like, the minimum funding award amount would be $75 million. And the max in that funding category is $135 million.
Okay,
so
ma'am.
So what I didn't get... I just want to end with a question.
Okay.
I was wondering if anybody in the AEA, yeah, so my question is if anybody at the AEA in materials they've received has an understanding of what funding amount they need for the carbon capture technology, because with the max amount in this award period of $135 million.
Okay, let me answer it this way.
It's unclear if they have that funding amount.
Well, the materials that were presented to the AEA are public information, so that slideshow will be made is available
it
on the AEA website.
It is online.
And that's the information we have.
And that's all the information the AEA has on that at this time. So, okay, thank you for your comments and question, but yeah, those materials are available online. Okay, so sorry, back to the agenda, and thank you for calling and for your public comments. Director comments, Director Thayer.
All right. The first item, and I'll just go through, on under 9A is economic impact analysis. I previously sent this out to the board members, but wanted to make sure it was publicly available, and that is we had our planning department, Connor, reach out and contract with Northern Economics to look at our three big projects on the rail belt, being the SQ line update at $90 million, followed by the Dixon diversion, and obviously the HVDC line or the GRIP project across Cook Inlet. And what we wanted to do is look at the economic impact to Alaska for those three projects individually. And so Northern Economics did that work. They provided this economic analysis. We're using this as a base for our conversations with our funding partners, with the legislature, and I might add that these numbers were actually used in the governor's State of the State address on Tuesday night. I think the key takeaway is these three projects that really are operating concurrently. SQ is actually under construction right now. Obviously, we're doing stuff with GRIP, and we're getting ready to file with FERC on Dixon diversion. Those three projects will create over 5,000 jobs and over $1 billion in economic activity. Now, when we say jobs, that's direct, indirect, and induced. But still, it'd be hard pressed, I think, anywhere in Alaska south of the North Slope to find these projects, 5,000 jobs at $1 billion with economic impact, happening between now and 2032. But again, this was just the Northern Economics did the work. We wanted to put it out there. Rather than us come up with the numbers, let's go out there and get an independent third party. That's what we did, and that's what these numbers reflect. So when going forward, I just want to make sure the board and the public have this and the background on that, these numbers.
And Director Thayer, I just want to clarify for the record, these are the economic impacts, but these aren't the economic intrinsic economic value of the projects themselves.
Correct.
The rates and whatnot.
Correct. So this is just
this
during
is above
construction.
And beyond.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, great. Any comments or discussion, board? Back over my screen. Okay. Next item? Or Tony? Jim? Okay. Yeah, next report.
Okay.
Thank you.
The next item is we have owned assets. I'd like to invite Brian Carey up and then Jim Mendenhall just to give an update on owned assets, and then Jim would be doing the GRIP 3, the HVDC line. Brian's in a FERC meeting. Okay. Sorry. He must be in a FERC meeting dealing with Dixon Diversion. As far as Bradley Lake, it's just it. What we have here is just – where we are. Bradley Lake in 2024 produced over 404,000 megawatt hours. Battle Creek was at 38,000 for Battle Creek. It was completed in 2020, and the one thing is Battle Creek is actually, ever since the inception of it, has increased the megawatt hours per year. So we had set it at 37,000 megawatt hours, and it's averaging 38, so it's doing better than expected. As far as the Dixon Diversion is concerned, we're doing a lot with the environmental studies in 2024. They are currently being written up. AEA has been meeting with a board of consultants on the FERC dam safety, and they met at Bradley this summer, last fall, and also he continues to do that work. We are on target for filing with FERC in January of 2026, so basically a year from now. If we can do it sooner, we will. And again, we've already discussed the fact that the governor's budget does have money for the Dixon Diversion, and hopefully with the BPMC concurrence, we'll have the full funding. As far as Sterling to Quartz Creek transmission line, that is under construction right now. Bradley is not operational for the northern utilities. We're islanded right now where that work is being done. It's a low point in the wintertime. If there is a cold snap and that needs to come back online, we do have provisions with the contractor and Chugach Electric to bring that line on, and we won't, hopefully, within a matter of days. So that we do have a building contingency on that. Again, that's increasing it to 230 kV. We will hopefully have some construction pictures available so we can kind of share the progress that we're having. One of the issues that we're having, and it's a change order, and we're dealing with it up to $2 million, and that is we're doing the work in the wintertime to work on wetlands. Well, when the temperatures were in the 30s and 40s, they're still wetlands. And so we're using mats, and they have to put the mats out, move the equipment. And so that's causing some issues. We did look at delaying the schedule, but since Bradley was already down, we would rather stay the schedule that we have, because there's no telling that next year the weather won't be any different than it is this year. So we wanted to move forward on it. And also, we're limited on the time that we can have Bradley down. So it's not that we can make up the schedule next year by keeping Bradley down twice as long. And when we have Bradley down, Chugach is doing work also simultaneously on their upgrades too. So we are coordinating that. And so the outage is from January 7th for 40 days. So we're about 20 days, a little over 20 days into the outage. And then as far as the GRIP, I will have Jim come up and discuss the update on the GRIP.
Thank you. Yeah, I just I think a memo was sent out, but I'll briefly go over it. I think as we've reported to the board previously, Stantec, they're looking at initial project plan and schedule, conceptual design, preliminary cable design, critical environmental analysis, and a preliminary cost estimate. They put out an initial report AEA, along with one of our engineers and all of the technical working group that had representatives. Do you need to pause? Technical working group from all of the rail belt utilities. We had a meeting last week. I think the preferences were settling on 200 megawatts of transfer capability. Most people prefer a bipole, which has some redundancy, versus a monopole. But there is a cost component to have that capability. We're looking at cable routings. What's the best way? Where to land the cable? What route should we take? And also, how much capacity, transfer capacity, is there between Soldotna and Nikiski? So we're looking at that. And then some other project schedules, as we have 8 years to do the project. Last Thursday, we had a meeting. It was very productive, settled on a lot of things. What hasn't been productive is through the IIJA and everything, the DOE is pretty much shut down. There is no conversation. We were supposed to have our official kickoff meeting tomorrow, and they postponed that. So they're not answering the phone. I think they have guidance not to talk to anybody. So, but we believe this is still a good project, infrastructure project, and we're optimistic it will continue. Stantec, on their project, their plan is to prepare an initial project estimate to be ready mid-February for one of the legislative meetings and to have a final report out in late March of 2025. As Curtis pointed out, the AEA has secured 62.7 in the state and matching funds from the utilities, and we need to secure another $143 million. I think initially $1.5 million is in the budget, but I think that's the starting point, so we'll see what happens. Happy to answer any questions, specific questions on the project.
Is there any questions, Board? Mr. Esso.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Not that this can be answered. I guess I just want to convey what I think many of us are thinking is the uncertainty around the IIJA and IRA and what it all means. You tune into the news and it's every couple of seconds there's some kind of an update or some gnashing of teeth in the paper or online around the words like catastrophe, et cetera, with all of these funding. So I know it's uncertain. I know through the statewide trade organization we've been asked, at least for the regulated utilities, have been asked to list out information for the federal delegation on, you know, what projects are up in the air and what the impacts might be. And is there any additional information, you know, maybe this question for Curtis, and in terms of, you know, where we're at with inquiries?
Yes, I guess we'll just do the big picture here. You know, we got the same notice, and there's been it's been somewhat confusing to kind of get whiplash of what executive order is out there and which one's not. But we've identified that all of our IIJ funding and IRA funding and Denali Commission funding right now is on hold. And so we did give the board a draft list of, we've identified those projects. It's approximately on hold, $550 million. And then there's the required match component, which is non-federal, which is another $254 million. So, you know, we're looking at $800 million on AEA alone that we have in the hold category. What we're doing here is we're sending out a notice to all of our contractors and subrecipients, don't spend money right now. Just hold steady. And we will let you know, or, well, you know, obviously when that's lifted. The one thing that we do know is anything to deal with the DEI or the Justice 40, all that is out of any federal award. And they're not paying for that as of January 27th. So that is also included in that, because some of our federal funds, we had to do a whole section on this Justice 40, but that's not being reimbursed. And so definitely that's out of contention. And so we're doing and then on some of our funding, we're doing a case by case. And what I mean by that is, like, for example, with GRIP, we have $12.7 million worth of state funding. What I've instructed staff to do is to continue, but we'll use the state funding, go back for the match after the fact, because we have deadlines for the legislature, if we're going to be asking for more than $1.5 million, or potentially we need the $143, they need to know with Santex where we are, what's the preliminary engineering, what are the cost estimates. They need that detail. And if we don't turn it in or have it available when we need to, we've lost the legislative session. And so some of those cases, and really our Santex work, is a couple $100,000. So we have federal, we have state funding. We can cover that. We can move that forward. But a lot of the funding that we have doesn't have a state match component to it. So we can't move forward. We don't have any funding for it. And then this goes into our line of credit of the $3.5 million. The $3.5 million line of credit is normally our churn. Well, if we've submitted bills and we're not getting reimbursed for them, that line of credit is, you know, quickly being eaten away. So that is a concern. But I will say this, the ADA board resolution from 2402 says up to $7.5 million. We've only needed $3.5 million. So it opens up a conversation that we can have again, I think, with Randy, just to have that cash flow piece of it, because it is going to be, I think at the end of the day, I would imagine majority of these programs are going to be fine, but they want to have a look back for transparency. I get that. I understand that. But an executive order cannot overturn an act of Congress unless Congress decides to act. And so for a review period, we'll see if it's a week, a month, or 90 days. You know, I think it's going to be a kind of variable amount. One thing that we're also doing is we're making sure all of our billing is in with the feds. So when they start paying bills, we're in the queue. So we're managing it, I think, the best we can. Like I said, we'll update this list as we do it. The one thing I do want to do is we'll update the Denali Commission awards with communities. So it kind of puts a face to a number as far as how this affects us. But again, it's a case by case, day by day. Mark's monitoring it from the legal side of it. And so I guess I'll leave it there if you have questions. But we'll keep you abreast as we find out things.
Okay, thank you. That was a good question and a good update. Any more on that theme? I know there's a lot of questions flying in. I don't see any hands up online. Any other questions for Jim or Curtis on those items? And I love the videos as well. Those are great.
Do we have those right
mm-hmm.
now? We'll do it in just a second.
Okay.
Actually, as long as we're on owned assets, we played the one video on Bradley Lake, but I believe that we have the one on.
I have the Dixon and the Grip video, is what I have.
Yeah. Would you, if we could all, can you play the whichever one comes up, Dixon or Grip?
And I might suggest I could either take a quick recess, or while the videos are playing, if you've already seen them and want to take a quick bio break or stretch, that now might be a good time to do it.
Hold on. Maybe. Let me go back. So. I'm going to use restroom. We'll just give you time to.
Okay. I don't know if it's. I have the correct link, so I'll have to find it. So. The Dixon diversion video is going to the RTO document.
Okay, it's going to the RTO document.
Thank you. You could email it to me. I'm sending her. She's not. She's emailing it to me.
Can you plug mine in?
She's going to email me.
Which one's that?
That's Grit.
She's emailing them.
Who's
to
that?
Me. Brandy is.
Does she have the roll one too?
I have the Dixon in the group.
What about roll? Okay, so we do have the Dixon diversion updated, or Dixon diversion video, which is complimentary to the Bradley Lake. This video was played to the legislature, to the Senate Resources, and to the House Energy Committee last week. was in that email?
I clicked on it. I thought it pulled it up.
Like many transmission systems across the nation, Alaska's electric transmission system is aging and in need of a major overhaul. The average age of Alaska's transmission lines are more than 50 years old. AEA and its utility partners are moving forward on creating a robust, redundant transmission line to handle the growth of the future from Homer to Fairbanks. This HVDC submarine cable will create a link for exchanging power between the southern and central region. By linking the two regions, a redundant transmission route from the Kenai Peninsula to Anchorage is created, enhancing resilience and transfer capability along Alaska's rail belt. In addition, it allows for more renewable power to be added to the grid and distributed across the rail belt, reducing CO2 emissions. Alternating current is converted into direct current to transport the energy with low losses.
Like many transmission systems across the nation,
Alaska's electric transmission is starting in aging and in need of a major
subsea cable.
The converter station.
The average age of Alaska's transmission lines are more than 50 years old.
Each converter plant is connected to the transmission grid via a substation.
Stop everything.
Utilities HVDC submarine cable will be the first direct current transmission line of its type in Alaska.
That was the one that was playing. I think this is the one that we run, right? This is the HVDC.
Can you back it up?
Do you want to start over?
Yes.
Okay. Now we have to share that.
But then we got to share it.
I think there's multiple.
Yeah, there's multiple ones open. That's the problem.
Yeah. I think it's.
That says group video.
There's two of them playing at the same time, so we got to make sure.
Okay, you're
sharing. This should be the correct
play.
One, though.
Go ahead, play. Yeah. Thank you.
Like many transmission systems across the nation, Alaska's electric transmission system is aging and in need of a major overhaul. The average age of Alaska's transmission lines are more than 50 years old. AEA and its utility partners are moving forward on creating a robust, redundant transmission line to handle the growth of the future from Homer to Fairbanks. This HVDC submarine cable will create a link for exchanging power between the southern and central region. By linking the two regions, a redundant transmission route from the Kenai Peninsula to Anchorage is created, enhancing resilience and transfer capability along Alaska's rail belt. In addition, it allows for more renewable power to be added to the grid and distributed across the rail belt, reducing CO2 emissions. Alternating current is converted into direct current to transport the energy with low losses over the long distance of 38 miles. This process takes place at the starting and end points of the HVDC subsea cable, the converter stations in Nikiski and Beluga. Each converter plant is connected to the transmission grid via a substation. This HVDC submarine cable will be the first direct current transmission line of its type in Alaska. voltage direct current submarine cable transmission line project creates thousands of jobs and stimulates economic activity during construction. It will deliver long-term energy savings, clean energy integration, and grid resilience to Alaska.
We have one last video, and this is on rural Alaska. Just see, do you have it? Do you want to? Are you ready for it now, or do you want me to continue?
Well, I got it. I got it. Let's see. I have to share this screen.
Alaska, the lights stay on because of operators, mechanics, linemen, clerks, managers, and the Alaska Energy Authority. This partnership supports critical energy infrastructure throughout rural Alaska. Using state-of-the-art reality capture with ArcGIS mapping technologies, AEA has assessed the condition of 190 powerhouses, 292 tank farms, and in an ongoing assessment of distribution systems, 32 communities have been visited and analyzed. AEA uses this data to prioritize urgent needs, guiding limited resources where they're needed most. Bulk fuel storage is vital for heating, transportation, and electricity in rural Alaska, where tank farms are often neighbors to entire communities. Many of these facilities are aging, with deferred maintenance costs exceeding $1 billion. AEA's bulk fuel upgrade program ensures safe and efficient fuel storage, extending the life of tank farms, upgrading equipment, and in some cases replacing entire facilities that date back over 60 years. Fuel, barged or flown into remote areas, is stored and consumed to power these communities. Alaska's rural diesel powerhouses generate electricity for entire villages. Operators ensure control systems, generators, cooling systems, renewable integrations, and increasingly complex systems are efficiently maintained. Through the Rural Power Systems Upgrade Program, AEA has improved quality of life statewide by funding projects from basic repairs to entirely new powerhouses. Delivering electricity in Alaska's extreme conditions requires robust distribution networks from poles to transformers to meters. AEA's Rural Power Systems Upgrade Program plans, troubleshoots, and manages projects that ensure the distribution networks are working efficiently. No one knows Alaska's rural energy infrastructure better than AEA's circuit riders, a dedicated team of technicians and trainers who are often the first responders to communities confronting large or small power issues. In the past 5 years, they've helped restore power to 20 communities during emergencies, provided rural communities remote technical assistance in more than 2,000 instances, delivered on-site technical assistance and training to communities on more than 400 occasions, enabled more than 180 rural Alaskans to attend and complete coursework in bulk fuel operations, power plant operations, or person-in-charge training at the Alaska Vocational Technical Center. Alaska Energy Authority, supporting the people and projects that keep the lights on in rural Alaska.
So that's a 3-minute video of what we do in rural Alaska. So, again, we design these videos because it's one thing to talk about it and have PowerPoints in Juneau and with interested parties, but to actually show what we do. And this one in rural Alaska, I think, really hones in what we've been doing the last couple of years with the assessments and everything. And I thank Brandy for organizing, putting everything together, and then whether it be Tim or Chris or Jim, Brian, everybody providing the context and the script for it. And we're going to actually put narration with the silent ones, because one thing I did discover, when you show it in Juneau, you're showing a silent movie and there's people online. So we are going to narrate silent. some of that. So, but anyhow, that kind of the fourth one to me is the best, and the fourth one, and you know, it just took a while to get to the best, and now we're going to go back and tweak the others. But anyhow, so we have the railroad transmission, and then we kind of the timing of it. These are our active Denali awards, which we have under 9D. With these active awards, all these are affected by the hold, the pause. We have identified them again on this larger list, but again, at the time we developed this, there was not a pause, but I just want to keep you informed of the active Denali awards. And the next slide under 9E is the power, the PCE or the power cost program is funded through the PCE endowment that is managed by the permanent fund. They give us monthly reports, and then Pam has put them, and so we track them as far as earnings. We don't have a statutory say in how they invest the funds, but at least we have a tracker to know how much money is being raised, or not being raised, how much money, what the investment earnings are. So it kind of gives us the ups and downs. But, you know, we ended in November, you know, right at a little over $1 billion. So that's real good. But again, it's just a snapshot, for the board. Then the, next slide, or the next, is 9F. This is what we have been providing to the board on a regular basis. And that is kind of our funding opportunities. Again, this is pre-pause. And so it, again, lists everything that we have. And then the ones that were highlighted are changes. For example, the training for residential energy contractors, a little shy of $1.3 million. We received notice of that award on 1625, so that was notified this month. Again, it's in pause. I know that money is not obligated to us yet, so that money might be in question in the final time. And then also, we have what we call conditional awards, and these I would say that we're looking at closely, and that is there were two awards for $36 million each that the award was given a couple of years ago, and then they had the application period, and so we're in the application period, and now we have this, that we're in this flux. We are still submitting the applications on the days they're due by due by Friday. We're going to have, there already been, one has already been submitted, one is going to be submitted, so we're meeting those deadlines. And we're assuming that when everything picks back up, this will be processed as normal, since not only did the federal funding come a couple of years ago, but we already have the receipt authority from the state, which happened in a previous fiscal year. So again, these are ones, but it's $74 million in rebates and energy efficiency. So again, we'll see where that lies. But we are watching all these closely, and then there's a couple of more that we have. We have AEA did submit an application for a couple of other programs in here, and we have considering, and that there are programs that are outside that we are looking at. One, the high energy cost grants in 2025 USDA. That's the second from the bottom under considering. That one we traditionally have applied for. It has been there prior to IIJ, so it might not be one of those that are affected that they're looking at. But again, we're just acting as normal as far as making our applications and filing our billing and everything like that until such time as we know something different. I don't think there is a memo on the home energy rebates training and residential contractors update. Just a background on it and the funding to it. And, again, the update that we had, but the update does not include what happened this last week.
Yes, Ms. Miller, question.
Thank you, Curtis. And it might still be too early to know, but do you by chance have a sense of what portion of the funding is, you know, related to DEI or Justice 40, like, and those being more at risk? Do we have a sense for that, or is it just too early to tell?
Well, I think the thing is everything that we applied for had that component to it, and that was done by an executive order by President Biden. President Trump has rescinded those that mandate. And so we do know that all those are being stripped out and will not be paid for. And so we're notifying our subrecipients and that this is no longer part of the contract or no longer part of the award because it's not going to be paid for. So that piece we know is going to change, and we are proactively. And, Mark, am I on point on that? Or?
Yes. That's right. This is Mark. This is Mark Billingsley. So we've got a notice from DOE specifically saying that they're not going to pay for anything DEI-related. There's also the broader executive order. So in all of the applications, you have to address DEI, but and you have to talk about how you're going to do it. But I don't, in most of our applications, we don't have a budget line associated with DEI, at least not for most of them. So we'll still probably be able to perform most of the scope of work and get the full amount of reimbursement. They're just saying if we specifically say that we did something related to DEI, they might say that they're not going to reimburse that. So this is probably a pretty manageable situation, except in instances where we have programs that are entirely DEI related, or we have very specific budget lines associated with DEI. That's probably how this is going to go down. But, you know, it's evolving quickly, so we'll see how it goes.
And one thing, not to add confusion, but our applications required us to meet some of those tests. So our applications and awards received had that in it, but it was a requirement for the grant. Now, if they chose not to pay for it and we take it out after we receive it, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification. That makes sense. Basically, there's kind of the overarching, say the HVDC line. And, you know, I don't know if this was part of that one, but anyways, within those grant applications, it's a good clarification that there's maybe a component that was to address DEI or Justice 40 initiatives. And if there's any budget associated with, like, you know, maybe community engagement activity or something like that, then that's what's at risk. But, it sounds like, you know, a very general statement in early days, most of the funding for the core activity, we're still subject to pause and review, but not potentially at risk. So thank you for that clarification.
I'm sorry.
Yes, this is Jim Mendenhall. I can just add a little bit on the GRIP. We did spend a little money up front on the community benefits plan with a consultant. We had some money in there, but generally it's all in administrative costs. And so we didn't, as Mark said, we did not have a specific line item for X amount, but we have ceased all that work. We've acknowledged to DOE that we have ceased all that work. And so I just want to give you a little background on that. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add, I'd like to commend the staff and Curtis Thayer. This is, you know, it's a dynamic situation, and I realize it involves a lot of rework on your part, and, you know, these are already, you know, a big workload as it is, so I just want to appreciate all the work that everyone's putting in it, too, and I think you're going about it in a very thoughtful way, so thanks.
Thank you. The next slide in the director of comments is 9G, and I did hand out for those in the room the printed hard copies, but for the board that are online, we were asked for the governor's trade mission to the United Arab Emirates to develop pitch sheet on AEA as far as what we do and looking at opportunities that we have. Obviously, the rail belt opportunities that we're looking for funding on, again, goes back to GRIP, goes back to the Dixon Aversion. And we also included a slide here or a takeaway on the SQ line. But this is what we're going to share in Juneau with legislators. So if they have an information, here's your informational sheet about Bradley or Dixon. Here's your informational sheet about GRIP. We can update these. But this is just kind of a great handout. And, you know, for when, as we participate in different activities. So, again, we had short time to turn this around. Brandy spearheaded this effort, and I think it's a good work product, and actually I think it's one of the best things that we actually took over to the United Arab Emirates as far as information being provided on AEA. We also did, at the governor's request, the back half of this is the governor wanted to look at, okay, what is the rail belt projects in transmission? In a perfect world, what are them all? So we work with the different utilities. We've been working on a transmission study. So what we did is identified basically the location, what type of upgrade, and the latest cost estimates that we had. And if there were older ones, we asterisked them. And the one through 19 by no means are in priority order. It just started. We started at Dixon and worked our way north, and that's how the numbers came to be. The green indicates there's funding behind it. Some of it might be partial funding, but it's ones that kind of show that we're in that next step. The two in Fairbanks are actually projects that Golden Valley are undertaking, so we wanted to highlight that those are work in progress there. We've also identified like the work that Chugach is doing on their from Quartz Creek to Anchorage, which couples with the Sterling to Quartz. So that was that project. And then to marry up with that is to identify clean energy projects using a similar thing, 1 through 17, but what type of clean energy projects are out there, whether they be geothermal, hydroelectric, storage, solar, wind, and we even actually added clean coal. But again, it's not a ranking order, and we're not picking favorites. We're just saying this is what's out there, and in some cases, we didn't know what the cost was. We, you know, obviously, St. Augustine, transmission line, a power plant, we don't know the cost, but it's being studied. So that was also something where if somebody wanted to look at investment or look at opportunities in Alaska, how does the transmission lines marry up with, let's say, data centers and where that power could be or where they could set data centers? At the same time, if you want to do sustainable energy, or where are some of those? We included Susitna-Wantana. It's out there, but we also asked to the fact that the information on it is old as far as cost. So that was the packet. That was the takeaway that we have, and we'll continue to update this as needed as new projects come online or projects are identified. Really, I guess, is there any questions on this information? Okay. hearing none. Next couple of things is we are statutorily required to do certain reports to the legislature, and so we will continue. I share them with the board usually as a CC, but we wanted to make sure for public notification, we have these in our board packets, and they're already available to the public of what we send. We had the one on, we're required to do one on the status of Susitna-Wantana, and we were also, and then we will be also doing one on the capital project status report, which is actually due, today. We have the Renewable Energy Fund recommendations. We will have that due today, and then there's another one for if there's any estimate withdrawal of capital reserve funds. So, again, these are standard reports that are statutorily required, but we just want to make sure you're aware of them and, again, have them in the board packet. The next item, and I'm very pleased to say this is very short right now, but we do have an AEA bill tracker of legislation that we're tracking. As you know, when I say that, normally there's usually 10 or 15 as there have been in years past, so I expect this to grow. Depending on the legislation and how it affects the AEA, then we're required to do a bill analysis as well as a fiscal note with legislation that affects us. Neither one of these two affect us. Primarily the first one is within the RCA, and the second one actually applies to all state agencies that Senator Coffin introduced. But again, a bill analysis and fiscal note is not usually done until such time as the bill has a hearing and you do the bill analysis and you do the fiscal note. So, there's a lot of legislation that gets introduced. A lot of legislation does not move forward, but our work usually intensifies when there's a bill hearing. And then generally for us, we have 24 to 48 hours to turn those around, but we track them first. So just want to keep you guys advised of legislation that we're tracking. And then the next item that is under 9J is our AEA community outreach. Again, it just gives you an idea where we are in the community, who's actually in the community doing the presentation. A lot of our prior community activities usually revolves around the public outreach with our IIJ funding, like the NEVI, the National Electric Vehicles. And, you know, we had a series of four or five communities that we were scheduled to go into in the next month, and all those got put on pause because, again, we don't know about funding on it, being reimbursed for it, and we are in partnerships with DOT, so we just decided to pause those. And so as far as I would still be out in the community, would still be doing a lot with the senior management, but some of the specifics that are related to IIJ will take a pause on right now, again, until funding is identified. And then under 9K is just what we try to do is just keep up on articles of interest. Obviously, if it mentions AEA or prominent within AEA, we send those out to the board members as we get them, and so they're very current. But again, for the public, we want to make sure that where AEA is mentioned specifically, that we make sure that that's available to the public through our board packet. And I think with that, I don't have anything further for director's comments.
Are there any questions, directors, on the director's reports? Okay, thank you. So the next item is, next regularly scheduled meeting is April 24th, 2025, 9 a.m. And we do have some confidential materials here for executive session. If the board wants to go into executive session again specifically to discuss financial matters, and there's a draft motion there to refer to if a board member would like to take us into executive session.
Jen Miller, I move that the board enter into executive session to discuss confidential financial matters related to Bradley Lake, that the immediate disclosure of which would have an adverse impact on the authority.
Second, Tony Izzo.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote to go into executive session.
Yes, sir. Commissioner Sandy? Oh, she may have left. Okay. Commissioner Crum?
Yes.
Mr. Mathiason?
Yes.
Ms. Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Seidman?
Yes.
Mr. Izzo?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Chair Copeland?
Yes.
The motion passes, Chair.
And let me know when we're back on the
record. Okay, Chair, you're back on the record.
Okay, thank you. So we've just the board's just come out of executive session, and the discussion was financial matters related to Bradley Lake, the immediate disclosure of which would have had an impact on the authority, and we didn't take any formal action on those matters while in executive session. So next, board comments, and I'll start online with Mr. Mathiason.
Good updates. I appreciate the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Seidman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great meeting again. I look forward to the April meeting, and I look forward to hearing about this federal freeze, and maybe we can work through. I think Alaska's got more on the line than any other state when this money is being frozen, because a lot of our projects are in progress. And so when you halt them for even for a moment, it throws a wrench in it. So hopefully we'll figure it out sooner than later. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Crum.
I just appreciate the content put forward. Nice, efficient meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, thank you. I'll echo Commissioner Crum's comments of a good run meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comments are related to the brouhaha over the executive orders and the funding. I was pleased to see in Trump's order that the kinetic movement of water, which is code for tidal hydrokinetic and hydropower, was pronounced right up there with coal, natural gas, and nuclear. As a co-chair of the Legislative Affairs Committee with NHA, I will point out that there's a lot of agencies and a lot of trade groups monitoring and watching what is going on. And, you know, the word I'm getting is that there is going to be cutbacks and there is going to be some concerns, and it's just worth monitoring. But a lot of the media has kind of been Chicken Little, in my opinion. It's all, you got to keep your eyes on it, but there's a lot of sensationalism going on there. And it's not unlike any other administration. You're going to pause. You're going to get your people into the programs. You have your priorities. And I would just temper that that's reasonable, and we just have to wear through it. I guess we'll stand by for the outcomes. But to echo some other comments, I think Alaska, with Governor Dunleavy being very close, and with us having an executive order of unleashing Alaska's natural resources, I think that we should stand well to watch how this unfolds. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mitchell, Jen Miller.
No comments, thank you.
Okay. Tony.
Well-run, efficient meeting. Thanks to AEA staff. There's a lot that goes into putting all this together. Very much appreciated. Thank you.
And for myself, yeah, just very efficient all the way around. I did have a chance to sit down in the personnel committee meeting, so kudos to the staff for bringing forward a new personnel manual after 10 years. And Tony, Jen, and Commissioner Sandy doing good work there. And also working on a director's evaluation form, so that'll be coming to the board before long. And I just want to mention the UAE, I've heard some comments and see some stuff on social media, but I just happened to read a new 2023 assessment of global innovation. They were ranked at the top, like the U.S., the UAE, and well-capitalized and great potential partner, I think, for Alaska businesses and industries and vice versa. And then, and of course, they've been participating in the Alaska Sustainable Energy Conference. Just one other comment. It doesn't get talked about a lot, but the Sisitna-Watana project, really glad to see that. And just, again, in the context of renewable energy, and I'm seeing some of the reports on the Bonneville Power projects in Columbia, Snake River. They're having record salmon runs 3 and 4 times when those projects were built. We see the flooding impacts on communities on the Susitna River, and I just think at some point we need to, as a state, reassess that in the water storage and wildfire mitigation. There's just a lot of just like to keep that front and center. And then, And then also the public comment appreciated that, and there have been some changes, and we've looked at that boxed LNG for Cordova. There have been some technology advancements and cost metrics, and then again the clean coal and the opportunity there is great to see that. And I'm glad that they brought forward specific asks of the AEA. It's always nice when they say, here's what we're actually asking for. So that I think that helps Curtis. Curtis?
No, I just wanted to mention that I was looking at some information on Sisitna-Watana yesterday. It was a 15-year-old project. It was started in 2011. So technically, we should be having a grand opening or ribbon cutting next year if we had stayed on schedule.
Those are all my comments. And thanks again, AA staff and Curtis. And just one more motion.
Move to adjourn. Tony Izzo.
Duff Mitchell, second.
Got a motion and second with no objections. Going once, going twice, going 3 times. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, everyone.